This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
DraftKings Sportsbook is not only my favorite sportsbook, but it's America's top-rated sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on the basketball team of your choice to win their next game, and if they do, you will claim $100 in free credits. That's promo code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older, Tennessee only. Wager paid out in site credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line. 1-800-889-9789.
This is The Blitz.
What is up? What is up? Good morning and welcome in to The Blitz. I'm Charlie Collier, joined to my right by Will Stevens. Behind the board, we got GP3. A beautiful Tuesday for you guys. It's pretty good weather, pretty good vibes. We're getting closer and closer to Omaha. Guys, how y'all doing?
Doing pretty good, Charlie. Can't complain. A nice morning. Had a couple issues at an unnamed fast food location, but we got here. We're good. We ate the biscuit. And I'm ready to do the blitz. Ready to get blitzed, as they say.
What kind of?
Is that a new saying? We ate the biscuit?
Yeah, sure. We ate the biscuit. It's like the Jameis W. We ate the biscuit this morning.
105.7 FM, 1340 AM. GP3, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good today. Nice day out, nice weather, just nothing to complain about.
2 days away, right, from 75 hard?
Tomorrow's my last day.
Tomorrow's your last day, and then you are a free man.
Yep, I can eat whatever I want, I can drink whatever I want. Do what?
Are you getting a divorce?
No. I've been very limited to what I can do for the past 73, 74 days.
Oh, are you doing a 75-day challenge?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And tomorrow is the last day of that.
Successful?
Oh, yeah. I've lost 40 pounds in 74 days.
Congratulations. Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah. Round of applause.
Big moves. Big moves.
So, that's exciting.
What happens if you lose count? Did you ever lose count during your 75? Like, this, could this be day 80 and you just don't know it, or have you kept a good calendar?
No, I have an app that, like, with a checklist of stuff that I have to complete each day. So, today it says it's day 74. So, and then with the way the challenge works is if you miss anything on any day, so like say you're today, for example, I forget to do one of my workouts, you have to go back to day one and start over.
Oh,
that would blow.
So, no, you don't lose count.
Fair enough.
Do you mind if I ask, like, so what's on like a typical day?
So, usually, ever since I started on the Blitz, I usually wake up around 7:45 so I can go work out before I come in here. And then I go home, eat lunch, work for 8 hours at my new job that I have, and then I work out after I'm done there. But one of the workouts has to be done outside. So usually I wait till nighttime and I go for like a run and do that as an outdoor workout. And then I also have to read 10 pages of a book every day.
Oh, wow.
Working out your mind as much as your body?
You got to drink a gallon of water every day. And then just no cheat meals and no alcohol. So you got to stick to a diet.
Fair enough.
No alcohol.
What's been? I'm 19. It's kind of been a pretty easy function of 19 straight years no alcohol. I think 2 years more won't be that bad. But what's the most beneficial thing so far from that challenge? Is it the book reading? Is it training your brain? Is it getting on a pee schedule with all that water? Or is it just the lost weight?
No, the lost weight is like, you know, a good side effect. Mm-hmm. But like, it's not advertised as a weight loss journey. It's advertised as like a mental obstacle journey. It's supposed to change the way you think.
Do you feel smarter?
I feel much more like in control of myself, if that makes sense.
That does make sense.
But the thing that's benefited me the most, I would say, is the water. Just drinking as much water as I do. Because I used to drink Diet Mountain Dew like crazy. And now I don't even want soda anymore.
That's fair.
I just want water.
Once you get to that point of just wanting water, there's no returning. You can't go back. I have a bad caffeine addiction, so I drink coffee.
So.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Then I take everything I said back.
But I mean, I just don't load it up with sugar and stuff like that.
What books have you read? You read anything you really liked?
Yeah, right now I'm reading this book on Andrew Jackson. It's just about the War of 1812. It's kind of like the forgotten war in America's history. So I've read that, or I'm in the process of reading that right now. I'm about halfway through. I've read a book on like religion, but like not just like any specific religion. It's just religion as a whole and how it helped shape the modern world. So not just America, but like how Greek mythology led to Catholicism, that led to Christianity, that also led to Judaism. It's just how like all the different religions were kind of created and became what they are today. I read that, which was pretty interesting. And then I also read an autobiography of Jim Ross, who is the wrestling commentator that we all grew up on.
Wow. I'm a big fan of nonfiction.
Oh, yeah, that's one of the rules. It has to be
a
nonfiction
book. I prefer nonfiction over fiction, so I would like that.
Yeah, one of the rules is it can't be a fiction. It has to be nonfiction.
I'm a fiction guy. Really, really love me some fiction. If I'm going to read a book, like movies, I watch a lot of documentaries, a lot of bio pictures. I like a little bit more realism in my movies for some reason. But when I read a book, I really do like a good sci-fi novel, a good just this can never happen in real life, and that's why I'm reading it instead of trying to see it. I'm a big fiction guy.
I like to...
But I'm not a big book reader. I won't pretend.
I like to read plays.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you read them as just all of the characters are just Charlie and you're just going through the book like usual?
Yeah.
Or do you read like, them, I just read you them make straight up, up your own characters?
I was a theater minor, so I had to start reading plays because I'd never done anything with theater. And like they'd be like, oh, read this play today. And I'd be like, okay. And we'd just read through the whole play. And I was like, this is actually pretty interesting.
But it's you
like,
don't play the own roles in like, your head. You're not like, oh, Romeo, where art thou, Romeo? And then you talk then back to yourself as Juliet.
I mean, I don't know if I'd change the voices in my head. I guess there's like a distinction. And in the same way, like you would read dialogue in a fiction book. Where
fair.
I guess.
See, I think I change the voices in my head whenever I read stuff like that.
Oh, I 1,000%.
I have no idea.
I get real into character. That's what I like about
but
it.
But then I also find myself reading and not paying attention to what I'm reading, and I'll read like two pages and have no idea what I just read. And like I'll just be thinking of something else while I'm reading.
It's fair.
But yeah, one day left after today. Can't wait.
Congratulations on your journey.
Yeah. Well... So you like sci-fi? Do you believe in ghosts? I want to know this real quick. Actually, you too, because now that you are on the Blitz, I need to know just where you stand on ghosts.
I have a weird arrangement with ghosts because I don't necessarily believe in them in terms of like all the paranormal. Like I'm not a big ghost guy. I don't watch ghost hunting shows. I don't necessarily believe every ghost story I hear. But I've definitely like had some weird encounters where it's like, if that was a ghost and that was proven to be a ghost, I wouldn't be surprised type deal. Like I've had some things go moving around. We built a house out in the middle of nowhere that someone had died on the property a long time ago, and that's an old urban legend at my grandparents' house. And a couple of weird things have happened there where like I've had a phone be moved to a completely different room, or like my fan would be spinning and then it would stop spinning without me flipping the switch and then start spinning again. Just some weird things, but that can always be explained by just electronics. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I absolutely 100% believe in ghosts and spirits and demons.
Okay, thank you.
Are you a big ghost guy?
I definitely believe in ghosts.
Do you have any good encounter stories or you just believe?
Well, I mean, there's ghosts in my apartment. Like last night, I get a maybe 12:30. And I thought I'm home alone.
Oh, okay.
I thought I'd been hearing footsteps in my apartment all day. And I was just like, hey, this is just what it is. There's nobody here. I know that for a fact. And then my next door neighbor, she calls me, and she's home alone for the summer too. And she's just like, there's someone. I can't even leave my room. I'm so scared. Like, please, there's someone walking around in my apartment. I hear him. So I was like, all right, let me get up out of bed, grab my frying pan. And walk over there. So
is that your weapon of choice, frying pan?
Yeah. I have a samurai sword too, but I went frying pan this time.
As if anything would kill a ghost.
So I go over there and, you know, I check all the rooms, frying pan in hand, whatever else. And then, you know, I go back in her room last. And then I hear the footsteps too. Like, they were just there.
It's a freaky occurrence.
And this is not the first or the 10th or, like, the 15th time this has happened.
Just a regular thing?
Where you just hear footsteps or, like, a door open and stuff. So.
See, I think you just need to get a cat because you can blame everything on a cat. You hear a noise. Oh, that's just the cat. You hear footsteps. That's just the cat. You hear running. That's just the cat. Anything, you can just blame everything on said cat and never be scared again. That's why I have a cat.
Well, I'm glad that you believe in ghosts, GP3.
Yeah, my childhood bedroom was haunted.
I might need to look into getting a cat, but hey, we got lots of sports to talk about today. The bracket for Omaha is officially set. Tennessee knows their opponent. We got some hockey, some NBA playoffs, some news out of the MLB, maybe a little Tennessee football news for you. So we're going to go ahead and take a break and get into it all. 865-546-8200. That's your number to call in. Join us if you want to talk about, well, really anything. We'll take your call, all right? But we'll see you on the other side. Kind of song that can get you fired up, GP3.
That's what you need on an early Tuesday morning.
Trying to get me run through a wall?
Everybody loves some Black Betty.
Amen to that. We had two more Super Regionals, the last two in yesterday. Virginia took the first game over Dallas Baptist. It was an earlier start. Go-ahead Grand Slam in, I think it was the seventh inning.
Well, did you see the play right before that where the Dallas Baptist player thought he hit a home run and tried to pimp it and pull off the Drew Gilbert strut, and then he got robbed by the center fielder?
I did see that. That was that was a tough break. I felt bad for the kid.
I do feel bad for the kid because I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it's the same kid, but it's definitely the same team that tried to pimp a home run and the umpire just told him to keep on walking and would not let him celebrate.
Yeah.
So I think he just wanted to get a celebration out, and unfortunately,
the
got
the kid that got that hit the game-winning grand slam, and the umpire told him to quit watching it. Middle Tennessee guy, he really? Played at Siegel. I've played against him a couple times.
Fair enough.
He's a nice guy.
Was he good enough to play in the College World Series?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Definitely.
I still can't believe an umpire would yell at a player to stop celebrating.
It's like the postseason in a deciding game, and he hit a grand slam. Like, yeah.
If you can hit a ball over 300 yards in any sport, golf, baseball,
yards?
Or feet, my bad, I misspoke, but you know what I meant. You deserve the right to celebrate. If you can hit a ball far, you deserve the right to celebrate.
Yeah, I just umpires trying to make it about them. And
if you can hit one 300 yards, you should be able to just drop your pants around your ankles and just swing it around the bases.
You think if you gave Mark McGwire or Barry Bonds a metal bat in their heyday, if they could hit one that far?
They could hit a golf ball that far.
900 feet. I just did the math real quick.
Yeah.
It's far shot.
I was still trying to do the math over here. but Tennessee, they draw Virginia. The late game, you had Notre Dame and Mississippi State. And Mississippi State really jumped on Notre Dame early. They took a big lead early, and Notre Dame kept trying to claw their way back in there, and they were just one or two big hits away. They left some guys on bases late in that one, and they ended up dropping it 11-7.
Made it interesting, though. It was 11-2 at one point.
Yeah,
and there was a three-run shot that made it close, and then another two-run shot, I believe. It was a solid baseball game for as big of a blowout it was in the early innings.
Well, for the 12th time now, the SEC has at least three teams in the College World Series. That's twice as many times as every other conference combined.
I'm sure the SEC graphics department was scrambling, too, because I'm sure they already had Arkansas on that graphic expecting them to be in there also. So they had to scramble to make a new one. So With the final bracket set, this is a question I want to pose to you two. Do you like our draw more, or would you rather have Vanderbilt's?
You know, that's tough. So Vanderbilt's draw is Stanford, NC State, and Arizona.
With their first matchup being against
Arizona. First game against Arizona. Ours is Virginia, Texas, and Mississippi State. So it kind of depends on what you value. Would you rather have, you know, a more favorable opening game or lesser competition in general in your little pod of four? And, you know, I would say, honestly, I think I would rather play Virginia first and then have to play the winner of Texas and Mississippi State. And, yeah, Texas and Mississippi State might be better than, you know, they are better than NC State, and then they might be better than Stanford and Arizona. At least Texas is better than Stanford and Arizona. But, you know, I think that opening day is so important.
Yeah.
Because you cannot start with a loss. It is so hard to start with a loss and then be able to pitch your way out of it. Because unlike, you know, the regions where there is a four seed that, you know, won a mid-major conference or something along those lines, I mean, you're playing three really good teams.
Yeah, there's no easy wins.
Yeah, there isn't anywhere where you can get any sort of rest for your pitchers, anywhere that you can kind of skate around someone and maybe throw Camden Sewell or something like that to try to save arms.
Yeah, no one made Omaha on accident. Every team that made Omaha is there for a reason. It's going to be a challenge no matter who you draw. I think I like drawing Virginia, just like you. I think Virginia is a weaker day one opponent. I like them more than Dallas Baptist as well in terms of who we play. In terms of group-wise, I still think Stanford's a little bit better than Mississippi State, just from what I've seen in terms of how they performed all this postseason, especially in the SEC tournament. It does make me hesitant, though, to play someone you faced before, especially playing someone you blew out before. I don't think you beat a team or come close to run-ruling them twice in one season if they are as good as Mississippi State is. Like, I think you have a struggle there, and because they've already seen you, that makes me a little nervous. But other than that, like, I'm much happier being in our side of the bracket than Vanderbilt's side of the bracket.
Well, those West Coast teams can always be a little bit tricky, mm-hmm. too. I mean, you you see Texas Tech and Ole Miss both lose to them this past weekend. You saw, you know, some of those big West teams, too, that weren't, you know, your one seeds in some regions pull off an upset or two before they got eliminated. I think I'm happier here playing teams from our side of the country, I guess, teams that we're a little bit more familiar with. Even if that doesn't mean necessarily in playing them, maybe we're just more familiar with them because we're, you know, playing the same kind of teams and recruiting the same players in a lot of instances. I mean, there's no easy way. Like you said, there's no easy way to get this done. But Tennessee has as good of a chance as anyone. Texas is really good, yes. Mississippi State's a pretty good team. And Virginia can't be slept on either. They have the Geloff brothers. The older one is one of the better hitting, you know, third basemen in the country.
They got Kenny Powers.
Yeah, Kenny Powers out of the pen.
Dude who punches himself in the head as he walks off the field. That's intimidating.
He's scared of caves, though, so.
That's a good point. That's a good point. I don't know. Is there are like caves in Omaha?
We can get a fake cave, like put it outside of the team hotel, and then he won't get on the bus to go to the game.
Caves in Omaha. Let's see if we can get this man lost. There's a couple caves in Omaha. Actually, no, they're not in Omaha. They're all right outside Omaha.
I don't know. I think I favor our side of the bracket, too. I think Texas would be tough, but I like having Mississippi State on our side if it were to come down to it. We've proven that they're no match, I guess, for us. I know we only played them once, but it was a pretty definitive win against them. Virginia, yeah, I know they made it to Omaha, but they were a three seed coming into the regionals for a reason. They don't really scare me all that much. And then who knows? Mississippi State, they're playing Texas in the first game, right? Maybe Mississippi State pulls off the upset there, and we won't even have to match up with Texas.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be preferable. I would rather play Mississippi State than Texas, obviously. And, you know, there's no easy opponent. There's no, like, oh, you know, we beat them before, we can beat them again. But we can certainly beat them again. Like,
I do think that we're
a better team than them.
I do think we have the easiest first matchup of anybody in the tournament, though, getting Virginia.
With that. I agree with that.
Unless NC State, I don't know. I mean, I would still think.
I don't know if NC State was able to beat Arkansas.
And NC State started 1-9, but they were ranked high to start the year, and then they went.
They remind me of like
stupid the rest of the way.
Like how Wright State was to us in that first regional game, just a team that's on a heater right now.
I mean, they're
and
just
you don't want to match up against them.
Yeah, I would say Virginia probably is the most favorable first round matchup. We got game times for you too. Saturday, everything gets going at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Stanford and NC State. They start things off at TD Ameritrade Park on ESPN, followed by Vanderbilt and Arizona at 7 p.m. Then we get going on Sunday, Game 3, Tennessee and Virginia, 2 p.m., ESPN2. So we get the early game Sunday. So if you are going Chad Dallas, presumably you are, you know, he gets – 7 days of rest, right? Did I do that math right? Because he pitched Saturday, and now would be pitching Sunday, so 7 days off, and then the 8th day he pitches.
Yeah, I think that's good math.
So plenty of rest for him. I mean,
obviously, Will Heflin did not pitch at all during the Super,
Heflin
so he's
pitch.
Very well rested as well.
You know, Tidwell, he'll get also 7 days if he pitches the next day.
Being able to beat LSU like that has, I think, set us up for a lot more success than people, I think, are expecting. I think a lot of people are expecting success, but like, I think it sets us up for success coming into Omaha, not having to go through all of our bullpen, not having to really do any of that.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice that, like, I mean, regardless, you were going to get a pretty nice amount of rest, but it was nice that, you know, we didn't really have to strain any of our pitchers in the Super Regional. I mean, we stretched out Tidwell's start a little bit, and we stretched out Dallas's start a little bit, and he did pitch through that rain delay, but, you know, it was nothing they weren't uncomfortable with, and we didn't really have to use much out of the bullpen at all, just Hundley and Camden Sewell, and then we let Redmond Walsh get a couple outs.
Yeah, I mean, everyone still seems pretty well-rested. One last thing on Mississippi State. They did play Texas to open the season this season on Saturday, February 20th at the State Farm College Baseball Showdown. They won 8-3 over Texas to begin the season. Haven't really played any common opponents since then, but in head-to-head, Mississippi State is right now 1-0 on the season on Texas. So
revenge game for Texas.
Perhaps. That's what it could set up for, or it could set up for Mississippi State to just do what they did already. It's going to be an interesting game. I think that's that and the Arizona-Vanderbilt, just because it's Vanderbilt. Like you want to see what Vanderbilt does in this type of environment. I think those are the two most interesting games right now to me.
Do we agree that
probably
we would rather
not
play Mississippi State than Texas?
I still think just because you've seen them already and you had that blowout,
well, I mean,
there's the likelihood.
We saw LSU three times. And like,
yeah,
when
I'd much rather play
Mississippi
State.
State is much better than LSU, though. Like, I think
you see every team.
That's fair.
In the SEC.
That's fair.
Times.
That's fair. I think because you already blew them out so convincingly, it just sets up to where I don't think you can reach that same level of expectation, and I think it only sets you up to fail, to lose. I would rather play Texas, even though I think I'm not alone here when I say Mississippi State's probably the worst team out of those two. Like, I still think I would rather play Texas, but I could be stupid for that. I'm not a big baseball guy.
I'd much rather face Mississippi State than Texas.
Looking at Texas's schedule, the SEC teams that they did play, Mississippi State, obviously they started the year with them and they lost 3-8. The next day, still part of this college baseball showdown, they played Arkansas, lost 4-0, and they finished off the showdown against Ole Miss and lost 8-1. They later played a 3-game series with South Carolina. They won all three of those games. It was one of the only times South Carolina got swept all year. 4-1, 3-0, and 8-5. And then they did play Texas A&M March 30th, and they lost 2-0 on a Tuesday night.
Oh, Texas A&M was not good this year either.
But that was a midweek game, so you weren't getting Friday starter versus Friday starter or anything like that. But, yeah, they still did lose that game. Continuing with the schedule, Monday you get the continuation of those Saturday games, the game one loser, game two loser, game one winner, game two winner, and then Tuesday, if Tennessee loses, which hopefully they don't, they play Tuesday at 2 on ESPNU. And if they win on Sunday, then they play Tuesday night against, again, the winner of Texas or Mississippi State, 7 p.m. ESPN2. But, you know, lots of Omaha conversation to really get into all week. I am pumped. I'm sure everyone is. You know, we're going to continue talking about it this week. But after this, how about we get into maybe a little Tennessee football? We got an exit interview with Kenny Solomon. He had some interesting things to say about the program. You're listening to The Blitz. And, hey, if you want to call in, 865-546-8200. We'll be back. Spend my dollar. Back on the Blitz, 10:40 a.m. Charlie Will, GP3 with you. And Kenny Solomon, he arrived at Tennessee as a speedy late addition to Tennessee's very hyped, now maybe a little overhyped, 2019 recruiting class.
Isn't that how it always goes?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, forgive me, I haven't been paying the most attention to football lately. Did he transfer? Is that why?
He has entered the transfer portal. That class included four top 100 prospects. Three have since transferred. Out of those four, Kenny Solomon was put on scholarship before his freshman season, but he did spend a lot of his career flipping back and forth between defensive back and receiver. Was two separate staffs kind of wrestling how to best utilize his speed. Last week, he entered the transfer portal, I guess, or it was 2 weeks ago now, and he did sit down with writer for The Athletic, David Ubben, and just did a little exit interview. I thought there was some pretty interesting stuff. You know, he said, you know, first and foremost, it's been good for him in the portal. Things are going well for him, and, you know, he's got some schools interested. But he said, you know, he made the decision to leave because he felt really comfortable with the old coaching staff, and the new coaching staff came in and changed things up. And he really wanted to continue to play receiver, but they wanted him to play defensive back. But
first thought, if the new staff came in and changed things up, that's a good thing from my perspective.
I mean, change is obviously good when you're as bad as you were.
So,
but I guess I don't think he speaks for all players,
right.
And I'm sure, I mean, we're going to struggle regardless of how many players, how many good players we have on the roster. Like, we're going to struggle this year. I think we all know that. But, like, change is good, yes, especially changing from last administration. Change that the players in the locker room don't like is not good. So that's what makes me nervous about this, is if this is just a Kenny Solomon thing, or if this is an opinion that a lot of other players have as well who just aren't good enough to go transfer.
Well, he was asked, how would you describe the transition after the staff was fired? He said, quote, it was a big deal for me. They have a totally different play style. They play quick, and I wasn't used to that as a receiver. Especially moving back to receiver, I was just learning to run the route tree. I hadn't played receiver since high school, and you add more stuff about how you have to get lined up quickly. And after that, I went back to DB, and I felt like things were going well. But I just started having this feeling that this wasn't the right spot for me. Pruitt was there. Yeah, I probably would have stayed. Then he was asked, hey, what was spring practice like? He said it was fun. I had to quarantine a little bit because of COVID and being around COVID, so that kind of set me back a little bit. He said, I felt like I was dominating at corner when I went back, but I didn't feel like I had enough chance to prove myself. Felt like I was doing well, if you ask me, but things just didn't feel right. And then, how would you describe the team's attitude towards the new staff?
It's the main one.
Yeah,
this
is what you really want to know. The attitude is great. They're trusting Coach Heupel. He's a good guy, a great guy. It's just a different system. You got a fast-paced system from UCF, and who was really successful, and everyone feels like they're going to bring that back and bring that energy to Tennessee.
So it just sounds like dude was not adjusting quick enough to what Heupel wanted on his offense and got switched to defense but wants to play offense. Like, if you're just learning route trees and you can't keep up with how high pace the offense is, you don't belong on the offense. And if you don't want to play defense, then I guess it makes sense to transfer.
A couple more things. What was it like seeing so many teammates leave over the last 6 months? You said, with the investigation going on, I had a feeling stuff like this was going to happen with a lot of players. I don't know everything that was going on, but yeah, if anyone wanted to leave Tennessee, now would have been the best time. And then they asked him, hey, you were the only player who's left since the end of spring. And he said, well, a lot of guys feel like they didn't prove themselves as much as they wanted to with Pruitt, and they feel like they have that chance now to prove themselves in this new system. I didn't feel that way. I could have proved myself more, but a lot of guys do. So, you know, I think overall, you know, you look at this interview, there a lot of sometimes with these you get some real juicy stuff about, like, what was Pruitt up to and or stuff about the coaching staff. But, you know, one of the players that actually liked Pruitt and was praising Pruitt, you didn't see a ton of that. And he had a lot of positive to say about, you know, the new coaching staff too. It didn't feel like it was a case where things were going poorly. More so a case of just things didn't fit well for him with the change. And that's part of college football. That's part of life. You know, that's going to happen with some of these players. But it's good that, you know, we're having players, even the ones that have left, you know, that they still have bought into the fact that Tennessee is going to have that energy, that Tennessee is going to be successful on offense and somewhat emulate what UCF and their success, you know, was offensively. It's a good thing when you have a player leaving and he still has positive things to say about the new coach, who's the reason that he's leaving.
Yeah, this isn't like a disgruntled employee flipping the bird as he walks out. I mean, it just didn't work out. It's just one of those things where it wasn't clicking. Like I said, I mean, if you can't adjust to the speed on the offensive end, but you don't want to play defense, there's not really a spot for you on this squad, even though, I mean, a three-star talent like himself, I would have loved to see something work out. But if you can't adjust to how quick this offense is moving, and that's what we're trying to do, then, you got to get the heck out of Dodge.
I liked him a lot. I was always a big fan of Kenny Solomon just
good
because
name.
His
a solid
speed,
name.
Too. I mean, his speed was top-notch.
That's the upsetting thing, is I think he would fit well in this offense if he was able to adjust quickly to learning everything. I think maybe just throwing too many things at him at once is probably overwhelming. I know I get overwhelmed easily.
Oh, man. Yeah, I wish he could have stuck around.
I wish he would have at least said something. I don't want to say he didn't say anything interesting, because what he said was interesting, but I wish he would have said something like you said.
The exit interviews are very, very interesting.
Exactly. I wish he would have gotten sassy a little bit, or said something about Pruitt, or said something about something someone said to him. Maybe talk a little Eric Gray, or maybe talk a little, like, just give me some drama.
Well, see, the thing is, with Pruitt, I feel like it's a little different than it was with Butch, because it felt like a lot of the players just thought of Butch Jones as a joke. Like, the way he ran the program, they just, like, took advantage of him. The star players could get away with anything. Whereas with Pruitt, it actually seemed like the players liked playing for him. The guy was just an idiot.
Yeah,
he didn't know what he was doing.
And that kind of, you can kind of look back at his time at Alabama, and that makes sense. It was kind of the same deal. Like, people like playing for him. He knows how to get players going, I guess, but just did not know how to coach football.
Yeah, and that's why you see it more so from the assistants. The assistants were the ones who had the big real issues with Pruitt. It wasn't necessarily the players.
Well, don't crucify me for saying this or anything, but
I might.
Jeremy Pruitt, I don't think is a bad coach of football.
I don't think he's a bad
defensive
coordinator.
I think he's a really, really bright football mind.
Okay.
And especially when it comes to the defensive side of the ball and developing, you know, certain positions. But he couldn't do anything else. He couldn't do all the other things that come with being a head coach. He couldn't manage his assistants, manage his players, manage discipline, manage, you know, being the head of a program. All he knows is defense and football. Like, that it just didn't translate. That doesn't mean I don't think he doesn't know his football or know how to coach the players. That's not all that being a head coach is, and he was terrible at every other aspect of it.
But even, like, I do think he's a good defensive mind, but that's about it. And even when you look at the Tennessee defense, he refused to adapt to the personnel he had. He was trying to run an Alabama-style defense with players that just weren't able to do what he needed them to do. That's why you saw us whenever we played like a lower-tier school, aside from Georgia State, the defensive schemes usually worked because they were just that much more talented than the team on the other side of the football. But never we played like a South Carolina or a a Florida or just any team that was even or somewhat better than us, they were able to just out-scheme us because he was running the same scheme that didn't work here.
I mean, people just figured out, run a slant. Like, run the easiest play in Madden, quick slants, either throw it to the flat or throw it to the slant, and it's always going to be open. And, that, I mean, that was just his fault. I do have – there was an article that came out. I y'all probably talked about it. I don't know if you saw this, but it was the anonymous coach talks about Jeremy Pruitt. We always have one of these articles come out per summer of an anonymous coach talking about someone. He talked a little bit about Heupel, but this is about Pruitt. You got the feeling he didn't know how to let go from being a coordinator, said the coach while speaking about Pruitt. Culturally, they lost the kids. We heard that from transfers and gossip, and it's also on the tape. They did not want to play. They did not want to work for each other. So, I mean, if it was that obvious to guys who don't know football like ourselves, who could tell things were going wrong, it was definitely obvious inside and outside the locker room to actual football minds like this anonymous coach right here.
Yeah. I mean, I think he hit the nail on the head with it. And I'd be interested to know who that was who said it. My first mind is...
It's probably Philip Fulmer.
I don't know. When we first heard that, I think I said it sounded like Lincoln Riley talking about the transfers and everything, but...
it could have been.
But if it's got to be an SEC, I don't know, Alabama.
I always just say Dan Saban. Mullen. I always just say my default answer is always Dan
it's
Mullen.
It's Mike Leach. Mike Leach is every anonymous coach.
Mike Leach would have thrown some. Like, I don't think you can
what,
have
what
Mike
if that
Leach.
Was the case, though? Every anonymous coach article was just Mike always Leach. Mike Leach.
I don't know if Mike Leach has ever had an anonymous quote because he always either says, like, hi, I'm Mike Leach, or he'll say something that's just obviously only Mike Leach would say that. Like, he'll bring up a random war fact to tie in to whatever he's saying, or he'll mention a Bigfoot fact to tie into what he's saying. Like, he'll make sure you know it was Mike Leach who was saying that.
Saw a raccoon tracks on my walk today, and that's why I think that we were able to have success targeting the corners on the post today in the end zone. Anyway, we got to catch a quick break here. Let's do that hockey on the other side. You're listening to the Blitz. Let's do that hockey.
Coming in with some energy, I like it.
Yes, sir. It's hockey time. How about it? First things first. Shout out to Pekka for winning the best named trophy in the NHL. Pekka has been named the 2021 King Clancy Memorial Trophy winner.
Is that the
what's that mean, Will?
The Walter Payton Man of the Year Award for hockey, right?
Yeah,
I googled it. I watched the video of him going to the Children's Hospital.
And now the NHL is going to donate some money to him.
Oh,
yeah.
Sick, really?
Shout out to
the hospital I was born at.
Shout out to King Clancy.
That's the hospital that saved my life, even though I still dislike the school that saved my life. That's the hospital that saved my life. So a nice kind of full circle type thing. They changed their profile picture to him sitting in a goat pen that just says goats only, and it's just Pekka Rinne and a couple of goats. Really cute picture. Shout out to the King, man. I love hockey. I love Pekka Rinne.
Well, you also had a hockey game last night. And,
did we, though?
Barely. Canadians aren't hot anymore. That's for sure.
I mean, they play on ice. You can't be too hot.
Well, like you mentioned yesterday, William, their first time playing in front of a crowd bigger than 400 people did not go well. Vegas was absolutely bumping last night. The barn was rocking.
Will the final score end up being 4-1?
It was 4-1, yeah.
Go ahead and take my second to just say I told you so. I felt smart last night watching that hockey game.
Well, Theodore had a goal and an assist. Smith had two assists. Marc-Andre Fleury made 28 saves. By the end of the second period, it was 3-1. Golden Knights added one more in the third. And it just kind of felt like, at least in this game one, the Knights were going to come out and overwhelm the Canadiens. Now, I don't know if the series will continue that way. We've seen plenty of series kind of switch up on us this postseason, but
Now, are they going to go back and forth from Canada to America with this series? Like, is the issue with, I don't want to say the issue with COVID as a whole over, but in the terms of playoff hockey right now, is the issue with
they
COVID
got,
over?
So, Canada is basically still, like, locked down completely.
At least Ontario is.
But they were able to get, I think, some special waivers and stuff to be able to do this hockey series. So, we're good on that front.
It's crazy to me that they just kind of, like, this would be like if America was still shut down and we weren't allowed to be having full stadium footballs yet. Like hockey is the national sport.
I don't want to get into all the politics of it, but their numbers are not even that bad and they're still locked down.
Yeah, I mean, Canada's been a little silly.
And it's because their government messed up with ordering vaccines, and that's why. But it's still, to this point, like, being in total lockdown just seems kind of overkill at this point.
Silly Canada.
It is Canada, though. What's there to really do? Like, you're going to get snowed in most days anyways.
Oh, I would be really pissed. These are, like, the two hot months of the year they get.
This is the only time you can go outside all year in
Canada.
Go
out and play street hockey instead of ice hockey.
Play soccer, maybe.
Tonight, you got Islanders and the Lightning game two. Islanders took game one on the road. Should be a great series, but... Hey, we got to catch a break. Big second hour coming up for you. We got a little NBA playoffs talk, a little MLB talk, and maybe some other things sprinkled in there.
Lightning are bouncing back tonight, though.
Are they? Listen to the Blitz.